I like how we just pop on the screen and take it
down. Here we are.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for joining us for another Spirits and Sobriety Talk. We have with us again tonight, we have Hank Settala of Emergence of Being. We have James Flynn or Jim Flynn right below me. And we have Brittany of Synergy Soul. I've got to do it backwards. There we go. This way. Synergy Soul of Instagram. We are live tonight. We'll gladly take your questions. So you can go ahead and type your questions in the comments. We'll answer you live this evening. But again, our topic, spirits and sobriety, how they feed into one another, kind of play. But I thought we would maybe start the conversation tonight, since all three seems to have started some of your addictions, like at younger ages. You know, what could have somebody have said or offered some sort of help to keep you more on a spiritual path of helping with your, you know, your gifts, rather than like, I'm going to drown those voices out literally with alcohol or block those emotions with, you know, some sort of drug. Jim, do you have anything first?
Well, maybe. So for me, I don't know that anyone could have really said anything. I don't know that I would have listened. But I will say that, I came from a good family, but I know for me, one of the reasons that I turned to using mainly was because I didn't feel like I had a lot of friends. And, drinking, having access to alcohol, my dad was a liquor salesman, so we had a lot in the house all the time that I could steal. And, and smoking pot, those were ways that I started to connect to people. I was, prior to doing that, kind of a straight A student nerd kind of person. And I think, again, I don't want to blame parents, but I think if you were going to ask me what I needed, I think I would have needed from them to have been a little more involved at the school, maybe pushing me in a different direction, you know, a gentle nudging, you know. Because I really do. I look at up until about eighth grade, I was really in with a pretty clean group of people. And not that I didn't have fun. I loved my friends and everything. But I really, I'm an addict. And I'm a person that can't do just one of anything. So it was, you know, one thing led to another. And so that was kind of, I don't know. I think I just could have used more support, or I wish I could look back. I guess I wish I would have had the insight to say, look, dude, you got it good right now. You don't need to use that stuff. So I don't know. And I did stop having any kind of premonitions. I mean, I think the last one I had was at like 16. And I think it's definitely a result of the drug use. I mean, I was having them before, and I had spells when I was growing up where I would see apparitions, but that kind of all started to go away the more I drank and used.
So you have like a direct correlation that once you started, you know, the spiritual ability kind of, you know, dwindled a bit, kind of fell to the background.
Yeah, the more I used, the more it kind of went in the background. And I didn't always realize what I had, but I knew I had something, because there was a friend of mine, his mother was really into astrology and tarot. And, you know, this is back in the 70s, and she was talking about white light and those kinds of things. And I was having some pretty wicked premonitions where I was seeing things that, you know, kind of freaked, like I saw a house burn down and woke up to a fire engine going off, and there was definitely a house fire two blocks away. And I was asking her about that because she said, "Ooh, you better just start picturing people in white light, breathe in white light, surround yourself." And that was kind of the first time anybody kind of told me something to do along those lines. And so it was weird, but it, you know, like I said, the more that I got interested in other substances, the less that I was concerned with that kind of stuff, even though I found it extremely interesting. But, you know, once that you get pulled into an addiction, you don't care. You just kind of say, "Ooh, let's do what's in front of me." You know, right. Yeah.
I want to add something, Jim, because this, I'm living this right now. Okay, remember last week or the last time we met, I told you guys about my sensitivity, you know, and that's really why I drown myself. Well, talk about sensitivity. As an Iyawo, or in my year of white to be a priest, I'm at this point now where, like, I am more sensitive than I ever have been in my entire life. And last night, my husband and I already don't watch certain TV shows and like things when they're violent. And 'cause I'm like, I can't, you know, I'm not trying to sleep with that. And last night my husband and I were watching some show and I could not, it was like something that I could normally watch. Right. And I couldn't watch it. And my first thing always is like, oh, have a glass of wine or, you know, something that will calm me down just so I can ground myself so that I can handle the normal everyday feelings. And so here I am revisiting that same space and learning new things all over again to help me not deal with, because I don't think it's anything bad, but navigate the sensitivity that's super, super, super heightened with like different types of herbal teas or different types of protection rituals or prayers, or when to know where I can go and where I can't go. So in saying that of being a kid, it's ask for help, because it is, you know, here I am 31 and I'm like, wow, this is exactly what I experienced when I was younger, which is why I ran from it the first time. And the things that I was allowed to do prior to my Yawo year, I'm not right now because of being in my year of white. So it's a whole new adventure of learning how to navigate sensitivity all over again without, you know, without reaching for something, even things that I would normally be used to, you know, like maybe even a CBD pen, I can't right now, you know? So really, really learning. I ran out of my CBD, so I like bought some chamomile tea. I have a lot of tea, but I bought a tea that was like made to calm you down so I could just like ground myself and not be overly sensitive. But it's funny that we're talking about that, because that was literally my conversation with my husband. Like, holy cow, I am even more sensitive than I was before. I didn't think I could get any more sensitive. And I'm not trying to like stay in my house hermit forever in my life. So I've got to figure this out, you know? But yeah, it's definitely ask for help and do not be afraid to reach out to people who have already done this or learn new ways, because that is a gift. Our sensitivity is a gift. The clairsentient is a gift, right? And it can be a curse to our mental health if we don't learn other ways to take care of it. Even if you have to cleanse yourself, I'm catching myself cleanse myself more than I ever have throughout the whole day. And I don't even go anywhere. I don't even leave my house. And so I'm like cleansing my house and myself and my family. Every time they walk in the door, they have to cleanse, just because the sensitive, like looking at the internet, I realized even being on the internet right now, even more so, like scrolling, I have to like throw my phone even more than I had to before. I like, unless it's something that feels joy, then I'm feeling it in every single piece in my body, you know? So don't be afraid to ask for help. Another thing too is don't be afraid to speak about it in a way in which you understand, because something that, again, our disconnect from our roots and our spiritual practices and our traditions, and we talked about this last time, it can be, you know, I'm not disregarding any mental health diagnoses, because they are real, right? But sometimes they can be misinterpreted for that, when really it's just we don't know how to work with what we were given, you know? Mm-hmm. And so don't be afraid to ask for alternative help if you're not okay with certain things, because right away we go to, you know, here's a pill, and that could shut off something that can be a huge gift for us in this life, you know? So yeah, don't be afraid to ask for help, and don't be afraid to verbalize to your parents that you want to try alternative methods. Not that you don't want to do things, but just alternative methods.
Well, I mean, Hank, maybe a slightly different, unless you want to jump in on that part, but because you have young kids, I was going to say, like,
I think the biggest thing is when you start to slip into that, you don't know that it's going to be a problem. And when you're intuitive at that age, you don't even know that it's intuition. That you're misidentifying the things you're aware of as your own stuff. So really education is the biggest thing, because it wasn't until I got into sobriety that I learned what an alcoholic is. It's somebody who has a phenomenon of craving after they ingest alcohol that presents almost like an allergy, is the way that they describe it. So you got an actual physical phenomenon of craving, and then you lose control and aren't able to stop. And I didn't know any of that stuff leading into it. And they have a saying in the program, they say, once a cucumber becomes a pickle, it can never go back to being a cucumber. So you might be drinking a little bit, thinking, oh, it's all fine, I'm just, taking the edge off. And then there comes a tipping point where all of a sudden it is a problem. And at that point, you're so far in it that you're disillusioned. You don't recognize that you're in it. It's like asking a fish, what is water? I don't know. It's everywhere. And you've already been lost. But when people are trying to get you to shift, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, and you fight. So if you have someone in your life that has addictions, instead of trying to force them to change, holding space for them and asking engaging questions, well, what if you could do it a different way? Not do it a different way. There's a whole different energy to it, because one is going to create a space of them choosing something different, and the other one is, I'm fighting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
You know, another thing too I was thinking about is having options for, like, making it known. Like, you're right, Melissa, we don't tell kids that, or we don't even talk about these things, or it's not the norm, right? And I can guarantee all of us as parents, our kids know, but it's not the norm. Like my son, if he was to go to school and say, oh yeah, all these things, everybody would look at him crazy. And I think that's also something that steers us away from it, is that not everybody's parents are telling them that this is normal. They're saying that it's not normal. And here we are, we're all living these lives where it's the normal for us and it's the normal for our kids. But as peers, they're looking at them differently, you know?
Yeah. Or another thing that would be really unfortunate is parents who are afraid that their kids are going to slip down that slope, and they say, you better not drink too much, you're going to become an alcoholic. So what is that actually creating in the universe? It's going to create the experience of them becoming an alcoholic versus,
yeah,
what could you do different? And a great example of that, my kids would always play with the van door. And I said, don't play with the van door, you're going to break it. And the van door broke. Had I not said that, would it have broken? But that's just one example of how that works. If you're projecting that onto your child, don't do that or this will happen. Oftentimes you're actually giving energy to the thing that you're fearing the most. So what, just presenting it to the person where that you have a concern about in a different way, that's not going to feed into the worry.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Well, Jim, you've got a slightly different, I know you don't have kids yourself, but you teach teachers.
Yep.
So, I mean, do you ever have any teachers coming in and being like, wow, little Johnny has this constant annoying, invisible friend that never goes away? And do you ever feel the urge, like, no, Johnny's a medium and that's a freaking ghost following him around because Johnny can see him, you know? And I'm sure in your position, you can't really come out and say that, but I mean, are you able to come up with ways, you know, to kind of help these kids or the parents who, I don't know if you ever run into the parents in your job, but.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit handcuffed with that kind of stuff at my other job, but I definitely go there if the parent goes there. So if the parent says something along the lines of, and I don't know, maybe this is just a spirit, because, and then I'm like, okay, they went there, I can go there. And then I do. I'll say, yeah, that's really possible. Have you ever had any other instances where you do you have a parent that's crossed over and have they said, oh, I see grandma, and you're like, oh, grandma's not living. Have you had any of those kinds of things? And if you want to pursue that, then I try to give them some resources, like, Lilydale has Kids Week. And just getting kind of, again, doing some reading, getting an education, looking into stuff about psychics and mediums and reading about how it starts for a lot of us at a very young age. And then it just kind of disappears. But yeah, if they open the door, I'll go there. But because of, I work for an agency that probably wouldn't embrace me bringing that up. I'd love to, but you do that with the wrong person, and the next thing you're in HR.
So reprimanded. Here's your yellow, reprimand slip on the top.
And it's funny, because I always say I'm out at work, and I mean that in a lot of ways, that people at work know I'm a medium and they know I'm a psychic. They've come to events that we've done at Goddess Elite, and so it's not that it's not that I would get a lot of doubt from them toward me, but they would be like, you can't go there with your clients. And I'd be like, okay. I mean, I can only do what I can do. But if the parent opens the door, I will. If the teacher opens the door, definitely. Mm-hmm. I've had teachers, I've been in, you know, I talked to large groups. I've had spirit knocking on the door with some teachers at times. And I have found ways to gently bring that up, you know, if I can. And it's funny how you can just kind of say little things. You start talking about something like rose quartz or, you know, I don't know, just you just kind of hint. It's the weirdest thing. When I was up there talking, I just kept seeing rose quartz around you for some reason. Are you kind of new agey or anything? Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, my mother loved rose quartz. Oh, really? And, you know, and it's kind of a place to go. You feel around. And there's been, I wouldn't say a lot, but there's been several teachers that I feel like I've planted that seed as well. But I think a lot of people are open to this kind of stuff, especially women. I mean, I think more so than men in my experience anyway. I tend to find more mothers that have an open ear to this kind of stuff, and more, you know, the bulk of people I work with, teachers, are women too. And there just seems to be more of a belief there. And so it is easier to go there. So.
Now, I know you do a lot of healing work. Now, do you find that you get more women or men coming in who, in needing healing, saying, you know, like, I've really got to put this addiction down, and maybe it's because, you know, I've been picking up everybody's stuff, or, you know, do you find that women are more open to embracing this and stepping out of the addiction versus men?
Sorry, you were asking me, Melissa?
Yeah.
Well, over the years that I've done it, it's definitely shifted. It used to be my client base was probably 95% women, and women were definitely the more open to working on themselves. But I would say in the last year or two, I've had a lot more men coming in for sessions that are on the threshold of being as equally open. So I think there's a shift going on, but for sure, it was mostly women before. Even when I took my Reiki class, I was the only guy in a class of like 20. That was taking that class. So there just seemed to be an openness, but I think men are starting to, you know, dip their toes in the water and become more open.
I agree.
Yeah, I will have to say that too, because I see so many, I follow a couple on Instagram, actually, some like sacred men groups where they're doing healing together. Cause yeah, we have got to shift that paradigm. That's, you know, my dad is an alcoholic, and when I talk to him about things, he definitely gears more towards the Bible. But if he was, I would say if he had a couple more years in there, he has quite a long time, but a couple more years in there and he came out, he would be totally open to some different types of healing, because the things that he says to me now where he's sitting in there, it's like spirit has finally, or God or whatever he connects to, has finally gotten like penetrated in a space where he knows he needs alternative healing, you know, or the traditional healing, actually.
I mean, I've noticed a lot more like guys coming in, and if it's a husband or a boyfriend, there's not as much eye rolling and like, are we done yet? Can we go? You know, they kind of wander around and kind of investigate for themselves. So, but you know, that doesn't always mean like they're ready to get, you know, vulnerable and talk about those things and put themselves in that space to be like, okay, I'm ready to be open and vulnerable and, you know, have to own up to some stuff and bring it forth and do it. So that's, you know, I was wondering, Hank and even Brittany, because you both do the healing work, you know, and like you said, more guys are coming through. And we'll just give a little reminder to everybody who's tuning in with us. Feel free, questions and comments in the chat sections, and we will gladly answer you live. Brittany with us from Synergy Soul. She's on Instagram, and Hank of Emergence of Being. And Jim, have you gotten a website up yet, hon?
I do. It's really bad, though. I'm not going to lie. It's jamesgflynn.com. But it needs some work. I used to have events and stuff up there, but since COVID, I don't keep up with it. But yeah, jamesgflynn.com. It'll give you the basics. It'll let you know how to contact me, and it'll give you some background information about me. But yeah, we need to get to a point where it's a little bit better.
Okay. Yeah. We have a question on here.
We do. We got Joan asking, what are, you know, we'll say our thoughts on the use of ayahuasca to achieve spiritual experiences, and spiritual in quotation marks. So, you know, Brittany, are you familiar with ayahuasca?
And, yes.
Your thoughts on that?
I don't see anything wrong with it as long as it's in a space where it is led by somebody who is familiar with it. And also, I am totally all for plant medicine, spiritual experiences with the right people in the right setting, and in a space where it's being honored by the culture or the people in which it has stemmed from, you know, because, I think we, even for myself and over the years of dabbling in psychedelics in my younger years, and even in my 20s and such, is not abusing it for, you know, not abusing it in a way where it's like another cover up, but just like how psilocybin is now legal in many states for mental health reasons rather than using Xanax or whatever, you know, if it, there's so many people, I actually did a, I was part of a panel called Meet Relic this year that was people who study psychedelics for all medicinal purposes. And I learned more, just spiritual and medicinal, but I learned more about psychedelics in that 1 hour than I knew since I was 15, and the actual reasons behind things. It was amazing, right? And so I feel like people need to educate themselves before just jumping into things, and also not using them as bypassing or thinking that you're going to skip something in your journey, because you're not. If anything, it's going to pull you further away if that's what you're thinking, you know. But in the right doses with the right people and the right education, I think it's great, actually.
I would agree with that. I think that I have a friend who, that's how he got sober. He, AA didn't work for him. Treatment didn't work for him. He, you know, and I mean, this is someone who fell hard. He went from being a surgical nurse, making six figures a year, had a beautiful home, lost it all to crystal meth. And now, you know, nothing was working. So he enlisted a shaman and someone from, I think, Peru, actually. And, you know, worked with that person, worked with ayahuasca, and it was all supervised. He's great. I mean, there's no drug use. There's no alcohol use. He doesn't have the urge to use. That's been lifted from him. And I know that, and he doesn't do it all the time. It's not like, oh, well, it's just because he gets to do ayahuasca now. That's why. That's not the thing. You know, the eventual goal is you don't rely on that as, you know, on a long-term basis either. It helps you move through a period and get in touch with things. So I know if you were to talk, I'm no expert. And for me, that wouldn't be the course, but I definitely see it as a way. It's, yeah, absolutely. I agree with Brittany.
Yeah. And I would I vote for that too, basically. But echoing what Brittany had said, it's exceptionally important to educate, because if you are going to go to Peru to do that, there are a lot of tourist shamans, and there are people that make the brews and they hold the ceremony, but they actually have no or very little shamanic training whatsoever to hold the space. And so it's very important that if you're going to do it, make sure you're with someone that's been trained. And ayahuasca specifically, traditionally, is like a last resort plant teacher. It's like you're facing life or death. You have no other options. And it's a very harsh medicine, where there's other teacher plants that are a little bit more gentle, I guess would be a good word for it. So it's not necessarily like, it's not cheap throws or anything like that. It's where you really need to get and do the work, because you've exhausted all the other courses. And one other thing with that is, do all the inner work you can consciously first. Get through it all consciously first. It's the stuff that's below that you're maybe not knowing about. That's the stuff where plant medicines may really facilitate getting that up and out. But don't think of it as a shortcut. Do all the work you can before you resort to a plant medicine like that. And then do your research, educate, and don't take it lightly. It's not a joke. It's not for everyone.
Yeah, I and that's what my friend would say too, that it was work. It wasn't like, yeah, ooh, I get to do hallucinogens, yay. You know, it wasn't, there was work prior to that that he had to do. And I do believe there was another plant that he used prior to the ayahuasca. There was a gentler one that he was introduced to first. And I mean, he'll tell you, I mean, like he said to me, he said that, well, the first time they introduced the ayahuasca, I was violently ill. He said it was not a great experience. He said, now later it was, when you're getting the insights and you have somebody working with you, but it really is work. I mean, you got to put a lot into it. This isn't, and I think people need to understand that too, you know?
Yeah. And with ayahuasca specifically, before you apprentice that plant, you're supposed to do a very specific diet for a month or more before leading into it. And if you're not maintaining the proper diet, you do purge, and that is not fun. I know someone that just went through a ceremony just recently, and they were like, people do this for fun? They're crazy. And like they couldn't believe how much work it actually was. It was not cheap throws or anything like that, but you're looking at it as a means of spiritual development and increasing your awareness. If you're looking at it as a drug, that's what it will be, and it's an escape. So it's really, it's just like an energy. The same energy to heal is the same energy to hurt. It's just a matter of intention and how it's used, and it's the same thing with teacher clients like that.
So I actually had a question that somebody sent privately. They want me to talk because they didn't want to post it here. So they said they are usually good at quitting anything that is damaging, but lately been feeling more drawn towards destructive paths. Is there anything besides meditation that they can help to shake their tendencies?
Well, I think, I don't know. I like energy medicine, which is put out there by Donna Eden. And there's a lot of grounding work that's done with that. It's not an immediate answer. You see the results over time, but I would recommend, you know, that Donna, pursuing some of the work at Donna Eden for that. It's not so much meditative. You are in action a little bit more. You're working with energy.
Right. Something that comes up intuitively for this person is to look to see if they might have made a statement to the universe. I wish I could understand so-and-so. Because energetically say, I wish I could understand why my parents do this. I wish I could understand why my friend does that. You're putting yourself underneath their energy, and unconsciously or other than consciously, you start to create experiences that relate to that other person. So that self-destructive behavior could be because of a desire to understand someone else. So look at that first. That's just my intuitive hit. But the thing would be ask the question, like, what would create something different here? And then see what you notice. So maybe it's a Reiki class, maybe it's the energy medicine, like Jim said, maybe it's ayahuasca, you know? But you ask the question and see what feels light to create a different possibility versus why am I choosing this? Because then the why cycles you back into the same experience again. But I would really for them ask if they're trying to understand why someone else is maybe choosing that. And maybe that in and of itself is what's making that create in their life.
I think that's beautiful. And what came up is something, it's more aligned with what both of you said, is being very conscious of the things that are being projected in terms of your energy and your words, and also energy medicine, but looking at the roots of certain things like your environment, the people that are around you, what are you taking in? How much are you taking in? Because sometimes too, that thing of feeling, it comes back to the feeling that when we feel destructive, we will continue to follow that destructive feeling, you know? So being conscious of what you're feeding yourself mentally, emotionally, even in your environment, but also looking into the roots of like just the past and what are you still holding on to? Because that's something that came up is a lot about past imprints or past experiences that may still be cycling through your existence.
Now, would any of you like happen to maybe notice that and we kind of touched on it briefly, but people who are in the spiritualist movement community who are, because maybe they grasped onto like either a type of psychedelic or even being addicted to something, which it might be harmless, but something that like even say meditation, but taking it to a point where it's more harmful than helpful, but because it's considered white light, love and light, spiritual, that is causing damage. Anybody?
Classic question.
Yeah, me too.
Well, because if you look at anything that is positive that you're now going to access, like everything in moderation, you want to use everything as a tool, not as a crutch. Everything to create more and not as I'm going to get by with that. And if that's the case, it's really important that if you're relying too much on meditation, well, maybe I should try some yoga and incorporate some yoga. And I don't want to have just one tool, because now if something else comes up, I don't have something that might address it. So I think diversification of the things that you have in your toolbox to work through things is like a key thing. So don't rely on any one thing, and don't get to the point where now you only have that one thing and that's it. Start diversifying from the beginning, do some different practices and get some different tools. Learn an energy modality, like trying to think of the one that you were going to learn. Oh, pranic healing, or whatever the case is, and get a lot of different tools so that you have something for everything as it comes up.
Because I mean, the first thing that was coming to mind, and I'm sure all three of you have seen this even in the store, when you get that client who wants to come for a reading every week or every other week, because instead of, you know, doing the work or working through whatever uncomfortable situation or relationship they're in, they rather just keep coming and getting the psychic reading, you know, to be told that it's okay or they don't have to do something, rather than dealing with it, you know. Or like how, you know, our shaman teacher was talking about, like that spiritual guy that goes and sits on the mountain and doesn't help the community, you know, it's just sitting there claiming like, look how spiritual I am, I'm sitting over here, you know, but not interacting. But, you know, I sometimes see little things, but, you know, the thing that was standing out was just the client who comes in like all the time for readings. And, you know, I think Jim, you and I have even had somebody who were like, no, you're not allowed to come back for like at least a month because, you know, this isn't helping you, the client, and we're not in the business for just taking the money. But, right. You know, those were just a couple of examples. But I mean, you know, if anybody can think of something else that, you know, like not to be on the watch out, but, you know, like don't replace one addiction with something else.
Right.
That's it's almost right. Like just treating the symptom instead of actually doing the work to get to the cause in those cases.
Yeah, I always think of that client that comes in and they, you know, yeah, it's a month apart from the last reading. And so my question I usually start off with is, has anything changed since the last reading? Have you done anything different? No. Oh, okay, well, this reading's probably not going to be very different than the last one then. So why don't you do some work? We can definitely have a session today, but let's look at where we want to go work wise and then why don't you come back in about 6 months after you do that stuff.
Yeah,
I do something similar. If you have someone coming all the time, I'm a big fan of giving clients homework to do after the healing session. And if they come back and like, well, how did that go? And they're like, well, I didn't do it. Well, that tells you right there that they're kind of just skipping along and versus actually having invested in their own healing at that point. And then it's like, well, if you're not going to do work outside of here, you know, it's great that if this is helping, but we don't want to just maintain, we want to make progress.
That's, I feel like that's with like that in life in general of playing, it's not playing victim, but being victim to our own situations where we think that everything is happening to us but it's really happening for us to be able to look at it and pivot it, you know? And again, looking at our environment, because I was reading also what she said. She said she's around people where she's helping a lot of people who are not in great situations. And that's, I had to tell her, well, I'm telling her out loud, you have to pivot it. You know, we can't always keep helping people. You know, if we can't help ourselves first, then we're going to find ourselves being drowned in the energy of who we're helping. It comes back to that sensitivity thing. Even if you're not overly sensitive, we're all sensitive beings in general. You cannot keep taking on what is happening to somebody else if you're not taking care of yourself first.
Well, you know, and some people can get addicted to being the martyr too.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
You know, not saying that your person is, but you know, there are just people who give and give and give and give and give, and they may not even brag about it, but then like they're constantly, like their health is declining, their finances are declining because they're helping everybody. And it's like this addiction that they need to be needed.
Yeah. Or there's also, I guess for lack of a better term, a label or a certain type of stereotype, if you will, people who come for healings. There's one energy, I call it the perfect trap. It's an access term. And no matter what you do for these people, they always regress back. And it's actually part of their thing that I'm so messed up that no one can fix me. And they're like feeding into that. And they'll go from healer to healer to healer, come see the same thing. And they always regress back because they have created this perfect trap that no one can help me. And they're enabling that creation over and over again. And that's one to really look out for, because there's really nothing you can do in those cases. And this way, well, you know, this isn't for my hands. And, you know, I invite you to go in and check out another healer. I've had to do that a couple of times when those people have come across my healing table. It's a hard thing though, because are they really, but in their case, they're not really getting any benefit from it, because it's actually, it's like, what's that? There's a medical term. Is it Munchausen or something like that? There's like people who are addicted to the medical treatments, like they fake sicknesses, medical treatments. It's something similar to that, where they're just there for the thrill of not being able to get fixed.
Yep.
Or they identify as the illness. Like if you were to help heal that, then they would have no way of explaining who they are, what they are, and what their life is about.
Yeah, and oddly enough, for one of the people that was really, I really identified this with, the first person, when I recognized they were a perfect trap, there was some tools and access that, help you get through that. And I was all ready for them to come again. And that was the time they like fired me as a healer. Like the session before I had the tools to actually work with that, they fired me. And it's like, they almost had a sixth sense that I know if I'm going back, I'm not going to be able to play into this anymore. And they just said, I'm cutting it right now. So they had their own knowing around it. And they then went to someone else to facilitate that same pattern.
You know, something that I think about this too, is I think about our soul contracts. You know, I was literally just right before we met, I was talking to my ancestors about the ability to create your own reality while also living in your soul contract, you know? And sometimes I feel like in people's soul contracts, it is necessary for, they hit a spot where they are asking for help and they're not taking the help because they haven't hit a spot where they're actually gonna take the help, you know, where they have to hit an even darker spot for them to be like, okay, now I'm here, now I'll ask for help. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it, I don't know if it's like because of environment. I was having conversations with my ancestors of like, can you tell me why people do this or how we can navigate this? You know, because is it because they've had that always around them, or even people who were raised in a really healthy environment and then find themselves needing help, but it takes them such a dark place for them to even ask for the help? Is it because it's part of their soul contract? It's just something that I thought about. Or is it because they just don't really want to take the help, or they don't know how to receive it, you know?
I think that's partially social imprinting. We have the belief that you have to work hard to get ahead. And like the most successful people or companies and organizations, they filed bankruptcy how many times before they made it? And some of us like, well, I don't want to get that bad. And some people maintain just a status quo. But some people, if they have this destiny to be great or whatnot, because we're in a duality and they're buying into that, they will go to the lowest depths so that they can come out to the opposite of that. But because we can be in the world but not of it, we don't have to fall into that paradigm, and that's just a choice. And if it is a soul contract thing, there's shamanic processes where you get to go in and rewrite your contract and renegotiate your contract. So even if you, because think of it this way, you are the writer, the director, the actors in your own play. You can do a rewrite if you have the tools to go in and do it. So that you're never bound by anything. There's always possibility to choose differently.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, I think too, I've talked to the people in the spiritualist church that have said, you know, that just because you decide maybe on the other side that here's what I want to be, here's what I want to do, here's my hopes, we end up being in a human body. and at that, you know, so anything goes once that happens. So I think the soul comes back with that intention. And but we end up in this body that is distracted by all these outside things. And so maybe the contract sticks, but just not in this life. It's the you fulfill it in the next one, because in this one you got pulled left and right, or whatever. That's probably going to be my deal. I'm pretty convinced. So maybe I need to look at you at rewriting that contract, Hank. Let me get
yeah. I was literally thinking the same thing. I'm like, I gotta text my friend and tell her we need to rewrite these contracts.
Well, yeah, there's a process akin to soul retrieval where you get to go and just rewrite it. So like they call it like the ever-present moment of now. Elaine Thomas teaches it for fellowships where you have like the space in between lifetimes where you're choosing everything, and you can go to that place and basically just do a rewrite. It's like, yeah, we're going to change that, write that out, write this in, and you're not bound by anything unless you choose to be, because maybe there's purposes for that. You get there and like, oh, you know, I see the relevance to this now. We'll just leave it the same. So hindsight or foresight's always 20/20, depending which way you look at it.
Don't be surprised if you see me soon.
What's that?
I said, don't be surprised if he sees me soon to come rewrite this contract. I'm really happy with my contract. I'll be honest. That's actually what I was talking to my god sister today about. I'm like, you know, sometimes it is bumpy, but I actually am having a lot of fun with this contract. So there's some things I would rewrite, but I guess I could just deal with them.
Yeah.
I have to question my sanity, like when I was writing mine. Cause I'm like, why would this sound like a good idea? Who let me do this?
Last night with this sensitivity, I was like, I thought I could handle this, and now I'm even getting more sensitive by the day. And so I'm like, who told me to sign this contract where I can't even go outside? What the heck?
Yeah, who left me unsupervised to do this?
I could totally identify earlier when you were talking about that sensitivity stuff, because I gotta say, it does go hand in hand. The sharper I get with mediumship, the more sensitive I get to other things. Like a TV show would never have bothered me before. I mean, never. I would have just been like, yeah, it's just a TV show. But you know, we were, what was that show? Oh, Blind Spot, right? So I was a big avid fan of that, 6 seasons. And the scenes, if they were doing anything to the main character who's not even real, I'd be like, no, I can't watch this. And it was this increased sensitivity that probably I had, you know, like I said in the past, maybe, you know, just shut off with alcohol and drugs. And so again, as we pursue this and as we meditate more and get in touch more with spirit, I totally agree with you, Brittany, that I, you know, that's been my thing. And I find that I'm doing a lot of grounding work along with this, where before I was just like jumping into this and I'm like, yeah, connect with, you know, once that mediumship bug hit me, I was like, let's go. And I was like, let's meditate every day, and let's focus in with the angels, and, you know, let's do the deep breathing, and and screw grounding, because that's just going to hold me back. And now I'm kind of like, no, you need to get your ass grounded.
You know what? In saying that, I was sitting in my bed a couple days ago, and I had been floating away out somewhere. I don't know where I went. And I had this download, and I had to post it. And then after the download, I had to run to my ancestor altar, because it's the feeling that I used to get when I couldn't get my feet on the ground and I was floating around in all the places and doing all the things and amplifying my abilities, but never actually taking care of my earthly duties, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I see that a lot, especially, you know, with the use of drugs and people diving into the spiritual practices, is that they're like, okay, I'm connected, but you're not really. Like, and then somebody posted, I posted this thing about, even though we're a multi-dimensional overlapping reality, just because we can see the things, if we're not actually doing what we're supposed to be in our human, then it's purposeless, you know? And somebody posted this quote, so heavenly minded, they're no earthly good, you know? And I feel like we get really connected to that in people like doing drugs and tapping into the spiritual community, and a lot of what would you call it, like the kids waking up to new age spirituality, where they're just doing all these things all over the place but not really knowing how to implement it anywhere, and then they end up getting lost because they never knew how to implement it, you know? Yeah, that's the grounding is so important, and for so many reasons, more than just ourselves, but also to be able to implement what it is we're even connecting to in the first place. And on the things, I just watch kids shows now. You know what? I told my husband, I'm like, you know what? This is just why I watch kids movies, because forget it. I'm over it.
Well, we do have another question. And Hank, you might be able to kind of go into this. With the whole contracting, if you do vision boards and write what you're going to accomplish, is that along the same lines or the same thing of rewriting the contract?
No, well, vision boards is just a way to put a physical representation to your intention, and your vision board may or may not be aligned with whatever your contract was. So they may be in line, they may be different. It's I would say if it feels light to you, that's probably in line with your soul path. Because things that are light are in resonance with wherever you are directing yourself to go from the higher self. But if what you're doing, if there's a heaviness behind it, it's probably taking you astray from whatever your soul came to look at. So it could go either way, really.
So how would somebody go find out what's in their contract?
Oh, then you go in and do that little meditation thing. Well, but there's part of me that also thinks that, you know, it is only the ever-present moment of now. And I think of it more as you have a script that you come in with. The soul contract thing I was talking about before, that's something my teacher taught me, and there's tools for it. But point of view creates reality. So if you believe that you have a soul contract and this is all the things that are going to play out, that is what your reality will be. And if you believe you have no script, that is what your reality will be. Both things are true and possible. But I like thinking of it as a script, and you can always ad lib. You can always rewrite on the fly. Based on what occurs, you can make a different choice that changes everything retroactively throughout time and space. I know that gets kind of deep and trippy, but really it's the point of view that creates the reality, and what decisions, judgments, and conclusions are you going to box yourself into, or are you going to not have those limitations and see what could be created without believing that you're limited by something that you wrote before a lifetime?
I mean, my brain hurt, Hank. Stop it.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I was like, I don't know.
Okay, what some simple version, point of view creates your reality. Do you believe in soul crunch? Yes, then you got it. If no, you don't got it. Point of view creates reality.
That's a simple way. You know, so it depends on, and I'll say, what is it called? What would we call it? Like travelers, you know, where we're traveling to different realities and timelines. I'm a traveler. So some days I'm like, oh, this. And then some days I'm like, oh, this. And then I'm like, you know what? Just everybody leave me alone right now, because I need to just sit with myself. That's how I feel when it's all different spirits from all different realms and realities. I'm like, can everybody just leave me alone? Because I just need to remember that I'm even here today.
Well, I think too with that vision board, and I don't know that I'm getting at her question exactly, but what I was thinking was you know, of course in this reality you can manifest whatever you want or what you think you want. And, you know, because I've met people who, you know, again, so my agency is basically a human service agency. And interestingly, you know, I play a part sometimes in helping the people through the orientation process when they're coming on board. And a gentleman that recently, oh, not that recent, it was about 5 years ago, but he was very corporate and, you know, used vision boards and used that idea of, you know, you put it out there and you visualize it, and it got him where he needed to go. I mean, it did. It actually helped him. But he also got there. And when he got there, he was like, you know what? This isn't really what I wanted after all. And so I think when I was hearing Hank talk, I was thinking of that guy, like that, yeah, your vision board will get you there, but your gut feeling is going to tell you whether or not that was really truly maybe, you know, and I don't know for him, but maybe that wasn't his soul contract. You know, because he was like, you know what, I'm letting it all go. I decided to become a teacher, and I'm going to, you know, do this, and I'm going to work with kids. And I was like, wow, dude just, you know, tossed away $300,000 a year because he wasn't happy. And now he's going to come work for us for 60.
You know, part of that is how many people choose what they're going to be in life because of the desires of their parents saying you should do this, or society saying you should do that. You want to have a job that makes a lot of money and whatever, or you can't make money at what you're passionate about. We have all these things that get into our brain, and then we're choosing things based on other people's judgments instead of our own knowing. And that might be what happened to that guy, because people were telling him, you should do this, do that. You got to have goals. You got to do this. You got to get the job that pays the most, et cetera. And that led them astray to what was really, you know, what was going to feed their soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, I mean, and going from that, Hank and Brittany, you both have young children. So, I mean, do you ever catch yourself telling them, like, you got to go to college or you're going to have to? I mean, I personally, like, I'm yelling at my 17-year-old, like, you have to graduate high school. But, you know, now I'm like, well, maybe he can figure out how to do it without high school. I don't know. I got told I had to go to college. I think I'm doing pretty well for myself. You know, I did 1 year and I got the hell out.
I do not do that to Owen. And maybe because I despise college. I have a degree in physical therapy assisting, but I am not the kid. Like, I'm the kid who got good grades, but would get kicked out of the class. And I'm like, why am I here? You know? And so being an entrepreneur, I tell Owen, I'm like, it's your choice. There's probably other things that I probably force on him. But when it comes to things like that, I'm like, it's your choice. If you want to go to college or if you want to own your own business or, you know, whatever feels good to you, as long as you're accomplishing something, you know, you can't live off of me forever. You have to accomplish something. But I'm really big on not forcing him to go to college, especially too, because watching, you know, my brother went through a lot of things of the stress of going to college. And I watched how much the stress of forcing kids to figure out what it, even on myself, right? Forcing kids to figure out what is it that you want to do? Like, they're 18, 19. I didn't even know what I wanted to do until 3 years ago, you know? And so I'm very big on having a purpose in some way, shape, or form, but not it having to be any way or shape in the norm of what we were raised in.
Or that it has to be etched in stone.
Yeah, exactly. It can change as much as you want it to change. As long as you're taking care of your basic needs, you're secure, you feel healthy and wealthy inside, do as you please, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm like, and I keep telling my son, like, I don't care as long as you've thought about it and you're going to try for something, but, you know, at least graduate high school, because the job market anymore, like, if you don't have a high school diploma, like, you're at the bottom of the list. And I mean, and I know that from a hiring manager. You could have two identical applications, and if one graduated and one didn't, well, the one that didn't is getting tossed in this other pile. But I mean, Hank, and you've got the fun added bonus that, you know, your kids get to claim a whole other country too. So I mean, are there other little pressures coming in that's expected from a German culture?
Yeah, because if they know the language, because if you ask my son now, I'm like, okay, tell me about college. He's like, well, if I know German, I get to go for free. And if I don't know German, I have to pay for it myself. Because as German citizens, they can go and they can get all the way up to a medical doctorate degree for free, as long as they can speak German fluently because they're German citizens. So we kind of have that added pressure that they have to make sure they know they're German or whatnot. But at the same time, it's like, do what, you know, just like Brittany, what are you going to choose? There's no right or wrong to it. You can do what daddy does. I, you know, ring crystal balls and spit Florida water at people when COVID's not around.
Do that. And the yellow water tastes better than the green water.
When they see me doing that, they're like, how much money do you make, daddy? And I'm like, no, don't worry about it. But but they also recognize that, you know, they have a long time before they have to make those choices. And he even, like my son said, when I was teaching him some Quechua for shamanism, he's like, daddy, you can teach me all about this when I'm older. Right now, just let me be a kid. He had that much awareness to know that right now he can be in the moment, have a blast doing all the stuff kids do. And he recognizes that I have a long time before I have to choose that. And if I do choose that, I'll let you know when I'm ready for it. And so it's a great space for them to be in. And I really feel that they're going to just choose what's going to be passionate for them and what's going to feed their soul. That's what we're nurturing as they're growing up.
I love that. I love that he said that, because my son, he does really whatever. You know, sometimes he's interested and sometimes he isn't, you know. And being around where a lot of the priests, their kids, and when I was in my initiation, there's a specific priest where her son, he's five, he's already been a priest for 3 years and he is so knowledgeable, but he loves it. It's the cutest thing, right? But, and I'm like, oh, I want my son to do that. And then I'm like, no, I wasn't raised with anything. I wasn't raised with any religion, tradition, or anything. So when my mom really just let me find my own path, which I'm very grateful for, you know? So I, as much as I want my son to dive into Santeria or Ifa or the roots of our ancestors, I really want him to figure out what he wants to connect to, and again, in life and grow. Mm-hmm. I really wish he would own his own business, I'll be honest with you.
Well, I mean, my son, I'm like, I could hand this down to you. And he's like, nope. Okay. And I'm like, are you sure? And he's like, no. I'm like, okay. What are you going to do otherwise? I don't know. Like, you know, and I've caught myself like, you're 17 going to be 18. You need to know. And I'm like, when I graduated, you know, 4.2 GPA, straight A's, blah, blah, blah. I had no idea what the hell I wanted to do.
Yeah.
That's one reason why I only did 1 year of college, because I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up, because I spent so much time studying and getting good grades that I didn't think about later. And, you know, and I'm trying not to do that, you know, to my kid who, you know, from his father's side has a strong predisposition to, you know, addiction. And I'm like, well, I don't want him tuning out, you know, with some other way of like, mom's bitching at me again, you know, here we go. So, but I do catch myself kind of like, you're graduating, dude. And what are you going to do afterwards? And the look of horror that comes on his face. And I'm like, oh shit, I should probably quit like ramming that down his throat. And, but I do know, you know, he doesn't want to take over God the C-Lead.
You know what I see a lot of, Melissa, now, and I really want to do this for my son, is being that I do a lot of money mindset work with spiritual business owners, is they are a lot of people, especially during this year, it's been even more prominent. A lot of people are investing in things for their kids, right? Like I saw this 7-year-old whose dad bought him $1,000 like pop machine and put it in an apartment building, and the kid had like so much fun collecting the money. And so it was in his name. Like he bought it for him so that he could see, okay, you can make money really easily. You didn't really have to do anything. It's just sitting there. So like introducing kids to other options mm-hmm. of making money, like people are investing in homes for their kids, you know, mm-hmm. if we had that much money, but investing in homes and things and land and things where that used to be the norm is handing down land, because our family had land, you know, we don't have that. So bringing back that norm of having investments for our kids so they know how to work with them at a young age, that's on my top list. Is the one big thing my husband and I want to do is investment property. So bringing my son along so that he's aware of like, hey, you can have fun and still make money and do something that you love and still have some passive income on the side, you know.
Brittany, we could talk offline. I can teach you how to do that all tax-free.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah. Yes.
And it's not illegal. It's not illegal. It's
totally illegal. No, I'm serious. Yeah.
That little throw up at the end.
I had to throw it out there. That was taking a long time. And I have a lot, there's a lot of workarounds that are totally legit that you can do all that kind of stuff and have it be all tax free at the end.
Yeah,
that would be a whole other live session we do. Here's how to make it work for you. Well, since we have a couple minutes, let's wrap up with a quick, like, who all was here talking with us tonight? So, Hank, since you're right next to me, why don't you tell us a little bit about your emergence of being and what you offer for any clients coming to find you?
Emergence of Being is literally next door to Goddess Elite, and we have we're just starting acupuncture, we have functional medicine, we have a massage, we have energy healing, shamanism. We literally have something for everyone, and we do things both in person and virtually. Well, things that are possible virtually, like acupuncture and massage aren't really, but all the other things we can do virtually, and you can find out all the information on our website.
There's those limitations, Hank.
Well, I found a workaround for acupuncture, actually. With an osteophonic fork, we can mail it to the person. And over a Zoom call, the acupuncture, acupuncturist Mike McClure can direct them on where to use the fork and the same points you would put needles in. So there is possibility. So we're working through some of that. But massage, I haven't quite figured that one out yet.
Have to get one of those like remote controlled massage pads and like, okay, now lay on the side. Brittany, you are mainly on Instagram, right? So yes. Can you tell everybody about yourself?
So I am a spiritual based business coach. So I help spiritual business owners and healers amplify and expand their empires, money mindset, outreach. And I also do a lot of ancestral work. So right now I have open a group mentoring on ancestor veneration and connecting with your ancestors for root healing or mental health or money health or all different things for connecting with your ancestors, just understanding yourself more. I do have a free Facebook group. It's mostly women. It's called Boss Lady Lifestyle because one of my courses is teaching people how to start their businesses. It's on Facebook. It's a private group, but I do weekly live readings in there, and we have different topics and connecting spiritual business owners to spiritual business owners and really networking. My big thing is I love money. I'm a life path number 8, and getting money, millions and billions of dollars in the right hands of the right people so we can shift the way that money is seen and used in this world. So that's why I really geared towards spiritual healers and spiritual business owners, because all of our purposes most of the time are to contribute to the wealth of the world.
Right now, just the lunches that you and I have had, Brittany, and I've had like aha moments. So definitely get a hold of Brittany. And then last but not least, Jim.
So there's my my email account. It's the best way to contact me. And then, like I said earlier, jamesgflynn.com is where the very tired website is, and that needs rejuvenating, which I need to do at some point. I am your garden variety medium. So I am psychic, and so I do both of those things. If you want to connect with a loved one, give me a call. That's really what I love doing. And I'm getting a lot of clients for psychic stuff. So so that gate's really opened a lot in the last, I want to say, year and a half. So give me a call. I might go to sleep tomorrow, but I'm full. However, I'm there the following Sunday, and I'm not quite filled up yet.
Right. Yeah. I think that not a whole lot, but, you know, there's still some openings there.
There's a few.
Mm-hmm. So next, what's that date?
Tomorrow's the 15th, 22nd.
Like, I have no idea what day we're even in.
right.
Tomorrow's the 22nd?
No.
Tomorrow's the 14th.
Okay. I know we
were
just.
What I love though, she actually thought for a second that it was.
Yeah,
wait. She just lost a whole week.
I probably would have. It's at this point because I'm in my house and like I don't really look at the calendar. I listen to what's dinging on my phone. I sometimes really don't know what day it is, which is kind of like a fun thing because I'm like, oh, who cares? You know, I have all my things and it's lined up. But to have missed a week, I would have been like, oh no.
Again.
One more. So I'm available at Goddess Lead, and I have office space as well in Lakewood. So whatever works for you, give me an email or go to the site and schedule with me.
There we go. Real quick, Lisa, Brittany's is at Synergy_ on Instagram. She's not on Facebook.
Oh, no. I think she's asking for my Facebook group. It's Boss Lady Lifestyle.
Say it one more time, guys. I missed it.
Boss Lady Lifestyle.
There we go.
Boss Lady Lifestyle.
Let's see. So we'll put it up as a banner. Bossy lady. There we go.
I am that. I am bossy.
You're assertive.
No why.
Okay. No why. We'll take that down. Boss Lady Lifestyle.
We should mention too, for anybody catching this that didn't catch our first one, there was a whole nother stream that we did as like a part one to this. So anyone who's missed that, you can go to the Goddess Elite YouTube channel, or if you're watching on Facebook, if you go back in the feed far enough, you'll find the other one. I think it was like 2 weeks ago, roughly. But there was a whole
maybe three.
But there was a whole other, there was a whole part one that we talked about too, with a lot of good information. And then we were inspired to do a part two. So maybe, who knows, maybe we'll do a part three. We'll see.
Yeah. Are we crazy enough to do a third one, guys?
Yeah. But we can talk about anything too. It doesn't help.
It could happen.
Yeah, we could pick another topic.
Yeah, I was going to say, and if anybody has suggestions or comments on, you know, spirit, sobriety, how that works, or, you know, we're kind of shooting off the hip. We wait for comments and questions to come in to help direct the conversation. So feel free to send those in for us. But since it's already after 8 o'clock and, you know, all the parties on a Saturday night during COVID.
All right. A wild Saturday night for me because I don't go anywhere or really talk to people.
Neither.
I'm going to go home to like feed the kid and probably go to bed soon. And I still tell myself I'm a badass. Going to bed at 10:30. All right. Well, everybody keep an eye. Probably a part three coming up. Feel free to send in suggestions, comments, look up Hank, Jim, and Brittany. And we look forward to seeing everybody on our next round. So thanks for joining us.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.